You know that we talked on the show before about how I know they send a lot of mail, but you can actually request not to receive all that mail. So if you don't like all the stuff they send you, then don't receive it. But join the NRA. It's important. As always, I'm joined in the booth by my wife, Amy.
Hi, everybody.
Scott's with us as well.
Good evening.
Tina, our legal counsel, is here.
Hello, everyone.
I'll get to our guest expert this week here in just a moment. A few announcements. We wanted to Amy and I had the pleasure of joining Keith Nelson and the people at Friday Night Steel out on at the Fairfield Sportsmen's Association out there past Stricker's Grove. It was a great thing. You know, for years I've been talking to Keith about going out to do this, and it's basically a real simple 3-stage shooting event. You go out, you go through your stages. A lot of nice people, very safety conscious, very welcoming. Everybody's out there to help you. it was a lot of fun. I can't say enough good about them. It was a blast. I wish I'd gone a long time ago. And I want to encourage everybody, if you're looking for some type of shooting event to get into that will keep your shooting ability sharp, because when you're practicing shooting, especially for self-defense, you need to be under some pressure. I know that we're not all competitors and we don't all want to compete, but you do need to be shooting under some kind of pressure. Well, this isn't real pressure, but it's kind of pressure because you're shooting against yourself. They time you. All the events, all the stages are timed. You're not competing against the other shooters. They'll keep your card for you, your times, and you report your times, try to improve every week. And that's really it, you know. But that clock adds a degree of urgency that, believe me, you're going to feel if you ever need to draw your gun for self-defense, you're going to feel a degree of urgency like you wouldn't believe. And I think that clock does that. And the targets are set up in such a way that it's more of a realistic, practical style shooting rather than bullseye shooting. The stages change every week, so, you know, you don't fall into a routine that gets boring. Great bunch of people. Look them up on FridayNightSteel.com, just spelled out, FridayNightSteel.com. Keith Nelson's the one that runs out there. And, again, had a good time. We're going to have some of the people on from some of the local sportsmen associations in the near future and talk about what's available to you as a member of those clubs and what the type of thing those clubs do. I think you'll find it enjoyable and informative as I have. This week, we talked about Class 3 weapons a while back, and there just is no way to do that in one show. So we wanted to do it again and take a little bit smaller bite and go a little bit deeper maybe into one of the particular topics. And that one of my favorite topics is machine guns. I love talking about machine guns. The only thing I like more talking about machine guns is shooting machine guns. That's even more fun. Tonight we're joined by Trent Warnicke of Inverse Technologies as our guest expert. Trent, welcome to the show again.
Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
Trent, if you remember, was on several weeks ago. We did the Class 3 weapons. Trent is the president of Inverse Technologies. And Trent, if you would, just give us a little bit of background on you and tell our listeners what it is you do.
Sure. I started off in guns, gosh, back when I was probably in high school, even before that, had an interest back then, and that developed into an interest, wanting to get in the firearms field. Went to Virginia Military Institute, where I got a degree in mechanical engineering. This is in the Marine Corps as a combat engineer. Once I got the Marine Corps, then I went to Knights Armament in Florida, worked for them as a design engineer. Since left them, worked for Armor Holdings, a few other companies, and then in 2005 founded Inverse Technologies. And at Inverse Technologies, we do basically three main things. The biggest thing locally is we buy and sell estates, collections of firearms, machine guns, any other rifles, shotguns, work with the state attorneys in the area. Even individuals, you're always welcome to contact us. We'll buy just about any gun cash paid for. I'm still active in the design side of the industry. I still consult for a number of companies and private individuals. That's probably about 80% of my time where it's spent. Have some folks that help me out on the other side of the business. And lastly, we do a little bit of training, more just recreational with machine guns in terms of history, operation, and basic techniques. Nothing like TDI, nothing of that nature, more just recreational. And we run those at Target World every quarter or so. We run a machine gun class out there, and we also do private classes as well.
Okay. Yeah, so Trent and I know each other really well, and I do a lot of business with Trent. I can tell you that he's a great guy. He and I click, we get along great, think a lot of the same ways and like a lot of the same things. So, he's taught me a lot about a topic that I've come to really love, but I didn't know much about when I first met him. talking about machine guns, okay? Now, if you would, Trent, I think a lot of people think they could look at a gun and tell if it's a machine gun. I think in some people's mind, when they see a certain style of weapon, like a black one, you know, especially, mm-hmm. Oh, that's a machine gun. And what, just tell our listeners in brief, what makes a gun a machine gun versus not?
It's simple. More than one shot per pull the trigger per ATF law, it is a machine gun. It doesn't matter what the gun looks like, if it's magazine fed, all these things, the evil features, the assault weapon ban, do not apply. More than one shot per pull the trigger, that includes burst mechanisms, anything of the nature, even a malfunctioning gun, there's, you know, cases involving that, that is a machine gun.
So that's, you heard it. That's it. If you pull the trigger and more than one round comes out, even if it's an accident, as he said, even if it's an accident, I've heard of that, you know, a gun will malfunction, and that malfunction, it will become fully automatic or capable of firing more than one round per pull the trigger, that makes it a machine gun. Machine guns are heavily, heavily restricted. So that's, we're going to talk a little bit about that in just a moment. We do have a caller on the line. Let's talk. He called before the topic, so he's probably got a non-related question, but let's go ahead and help him. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I just had a question. You mentioned the NRA. I just wanted to get your opinion of them and the backing of the Disclosure Act, or the Disclose Act. And don't you think that it's kind of a situation where who watches the watchers? And I'm sure the NRA does a lot of good stuff, but as one giant organization that we give a lot of money to, aren't there other organizations that we can support? And shouldn't we ask questions about what they throw their power behind and what legislation they do?
Well, yeah, I agree that we should, and you're probably right. But this is one issue, and to be honest with you, when you compare it to a lot of the other issues that the NRA has really taken the bull by the horns on, you should take a personal responsibility and satisfy yourself that you know what the organizations you belong to are involved in. I know I've done that, and I'm satisfied with what the NRA has done for me, and I'm satisfied with what they're doing. They're certainly not perfect, and maybe they could do better. I'm sure I could do better, and I'm sure you could do better too, but overall, the NRA is the only reason that we can own guns in this country, and that's for certain, and there's no question about that. So support the NRA, absolutely. And yes, anytime you're involved with an organization, and this is for everybody, when you're involved with an organization, yeah, the caller is right. You should know about them. You should just not just assume anything. You should know about them. So, okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to get into what a machine gun is and can you even own one? And actually, you can. So this is going to be an interesting topic. Back in a moment with more Trigger Time with Joe Barrett here on 55 KRC, the talk station.
55 KRC.
Thomas Jefferson once said, "No free man shall ever be precluded the use of arms." The decision to own a firearm isn't an easy one. What type should you buy? Where can you go for training? What are the laws governing carry and transport? And what role does the Second Amendment play in the lives of Americans? Listen in as we delve into this often controversial topic and separate fact from fallacy. Explore the right to bear arms and all that goes with it. Tune in Sunday nights at 7 for Trigger Time with Joe Barrett, right here on 55 KRC, the talk station.
We don't get many second chances. This one could save your life. A TIA, or transient ischemic stroke, is a mini stroke. Symptoms usually go away within 24 hours and you feel fine again. But if you don't get to a stroke center or hospital fast, you risk a full-fledged stroke that can change your life forever. Don't take that chance. Contact National Stroke Association at 1-800-STROKES or visit stroke.org and find out more about recognizing stroke symptoms fast. Do it now, while there's still time.
Providing you with a wealth of information from the Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station.
Okay, you're back with Trigger Time on 55 KRC, the talk station. If you'd like to join the show, give us a call now at 513-749-5500.
Thank you, Amy. That's right. This is Trigger Time with Joe Barrett. Tonight, we're talking machine guns. Our guest expert tonight, Trent Warnicke of Inverse Technologies. Before we went to break, we talked a little bit about the NRA. Trent made an interesting point during the break. He said, yeah, there's any time you're in any relationship, you're going to find that one of the other is going to do something that you don't like. It's like divorcing your wife over a petty issue. And even if it is a big issue, you know, there might be alternatives other than complete and total separation. But We're NRA supporters, and I believe me, this what the caller mentioned, that's not the first thing the NRA has ever done that I didn't like. But look at what they do. I mean, when we hear that unofficially the House tells these people, look, you send anything up here that is anti-gun and we're going to reject it. And we know why they feel that way, because the NRA grades each one of them, and they're honestly the NRA keeps them in check in a way to keep our gun rights safe. So as long as they're doing that, until there's another big boy on the block that can do what they do, they've got my vote. 749-5500 if you have a question or a comment about machine guns, any type of Class 3 weapon, if you know what a Class 3 weapon is. If you don't know what one is, you're going to know in a minute. Trent, the notion, I think, of owning a machine gun, I think some people who aren't gun people like you and I, and they may say, well, why would anybody need to own a machine gun? And I tell you, my sister gave me the best analogy, I think, that I've heard, and that is, it's kind of like, why would anybody? I mean, I guarantee you right now, somebody within a few miles of here owns a car that goes over 250 miles an hour. Even though legally you can't drive a car over 250 miles an hour anywhere around here. Mm-hmm. So why would you need to own such a high-performance vehicle? And you know what? I think it's the same thing. Some of us like higher-performance items that are unique. And I guess I want to get this one out of the way. The fact is, private citizens can own machine guns.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
How often, and of these people, the private citizens that own machine guns, how many of those have been used in a crime that you know of?
To my knowledge, one. And that was in the Dayton area by a police officer.
So it doesn't sound like this is an area that's being abused by the criminal element. I mean, well, you really can't. It's to get a machine gun, we're going to talk about in a minute, is no easy feat.
Oh, no. It's a very involved process. It's like concealed carry. I will use the word as silly as concealed carry. No criminal is going to be precluded from carrying an arm or going to go through the process to get the concealed carry. Same thing for machine gun. It's so expensive and laborious with the background checks. The only people that go through it are law-abiding citizens.
Right.
Plenty of illegal machine guns are out there in quantity, but we just play the game, and this is a process we go through.
Right. And I guess I'd say, all right, let's just say this. Machine guns are ownable, okay? They are what we call NFA registered weapons. Is that what we say?
Yeah, let me
explain to us what the NFA registry is.
Sure, I'll give you a quick history lesson here. Up until 1934, all guns, machine guns, everything in this country were completely unregulated. The National Firearms Act, what we call NFA Act of 1934, was passed, and that basically said you can still own machine guns as a private individual. You can make them, import them, but you're going to be subject to a really stringent background check and a $200 tax per weapon every time that weapon changes hands. Then until 1968 Gun Control Act then shut off the importation of civilian legal machine guns. So up until the end of 1968, you could still, everything was grandfathered that was in the country. You could still make new machine guns for civilian usage. You do the background check, pay your $200 tax, but you could no longer import. The last piece of legislation that really tied or put the nail in the coffin for machine guns was 1986, the Gun Owners Protection Act, signed by Reagan. A lot of good things in this act, but it had some stuff attached to the end of it that said no more domestic production for civilian legal machine guns. So, in effect, what you're left with is about a little less than 200,000 total registered machine guns after May of 86 that are legal for all individuals in the country, well, about 38 of the 50 states where you can own these guns. They're all grandfathered. They can be traded back and forth, but there's a finite supply of that 180 to 200,000 total guns. Hence the price increases we're seeing today, why the guns are so valuable. So it's purely an artificial inflation of the price on the guns based on those three laws, the last one being in 86.
Right. So, and I guess the point there is that there's a finite amount of them now. In other words, the ones that are being manufactured by machine gun manufacturers today, I'm never going to own.
That's right.
There are only X number of these weapons in existence that are legally ownable in the United States by private citizens.
Right.
And it is really just the changing of hands of those amongst the people they're registered to, right?
Exactly.
That's what
people refer to those as fully transferable machine guns. That means any qualified private or individual or citizen can own that gun. Then you have dealer sample guns, which basically only dealers or military and law enforcement can own. And those would be guns made after 86 or imported after 68 would be what we call dealer sample guns.
And but those aren't, those are again for dealers or law enforcement.
Correct.
Not
correct.
Ownable by
a lot of guys will see, oh, an MP5 is $16,000. I found a dealer sample MP5 for, you know, might be anywhere from $1,400 to $7,000, depending on what status of dealer sample it is. Oh, I want that gun. It's half the price. Well, that's only for dealers.
Right. And let's say, and I the average person, I take my machine gun to Target World. I've got a couple. I take one to Target World every now and then and shoot it. And invariably, somebody will ask me, "Oh, well, you got to have some kind of, what did you get, a special license or something?" And maybe you could explain it isn't really a license.
You
pay a tax.
Yeah, every gun you'll fill out as an individual, the gun will be transferred to you in what we call an ATF Form 4. It's not a license. I'm not even sure the word permit, I'd refer to Tina on that as illegal, if that's a legal term for it, but it's basically a piece of paper that has, on the front side, has all the info on the weapon, has your picture, and it allows you to have possession of that weapon, has a $200 denomination stamp on it that you pay the $200 tax for, and that's paperwork you get back that allows you to own that gun. And that's good for life. That $200 is a one-time fee. It's not annual fee, not a semi-annual fee, anything of that nature. But it's just a Form 4 transfer. Do not have to be a dealer. Do not have to be, you know, if you can own a regular gun and pass a 4473 background check, you can own a machine gun. Typically, you can own a machine gun.
Typically,
yes.
Right. Yep. Okay. All right. 749-5500. If you have a question about machine guns or anything like that, we do have a caller on the line. I think he's got a non-related question. We'll try to help him real quick. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. You've got a question. Looks like about concealed carry. Is that it?
Well, I do. I know you're talking about the Class 3, which is a really good show, by the way. And I'm sure you might even have covered this before, but I've just kind of started listening
That's
to it
okay.
with your show in the past couple of weeks. But in a commercial vehicle, is that a new or adult? Because I don't have a concealed carry. I'm looking into getting one. And I do drive for a living. I deliver concrete parts and stuff like that, different places. And I'm, you know, like in Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just kind of curious, what's the do or don't on that? And is there, you know, is that a big no-no in a commercial, even with a concealed carry, as long as you've got permission from your company?
The only thing I know for sure is that I have a couple of friends that I actually have commercial license, and I know they do carry at work. I do know that one of them went through an issue with his employer, and it was something the employer had to relinquish on. I believe that the employer has the freedom to say or yes or no because you're in their vehicle. The fact that you are in a commercial vehicle, I don't think necessarily precludes you, depending on what type of driving you're doing. Now, I'm sure if you're driving a school bus,
right.
They're not going to let you carry, they're not going to let you carry. But I do know people that do operate on their concealed carry weapons permit in a commercial vehicle right now. And they only problem they ran into was with their employer. One of the employers consented. The other one is still thinking about it. So I think the only issue you'll have is with your employer.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. All right, Jeff.
Sounds good. That pretty much helps me out.
All right, good. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it. Great show. Uh-huh.
Thank you. Bye. So, Trent, I guess one of the questions that I would ask, Grandpa goes away to World War II a long time ago, right? And I don't know, maybe he figures out a way to bring back some old German machine gun, all right?
Sure.
Find it in the attic,
mm-hmm.
a year ago. And there it lays, you know, nobody even knew it was there. What can a person do now with this gun to add it to the registry? Can that be done, or what do they do?
No, you really can't. If it wasn't when they brought the weapons back initially, they could have been registered. Then in 1968, there was about a 30-day amnesty where any machine gun could be brought to the basically given to or told the government, I own this. It could be registered. It could be in the registry as a legal machine gun. That was about 30-day window in 1968. After that, There's really no nothing you can do. The gun at best could be parted out. A lot of the World War II guns be worth a lot as parts. You actually destroy the receiver and then buy the parts. Mm-hmm. It can be donated to a museum. Honestly, I'd rather probably take the money than a donation unless you saw fit to do that. Class II manufacturers could take the gun and remanufacture it, but then it's a dealer sample gun again because it was a machine gun made after 86. Once you destroy it and make it again, so pretty much. it's contraband or it's registered. And there's really no in between.
And that's really it.
Yeah, we
it's
get a lot.
It's either legal or it's not.
I see a fair number of widows. You know, the husband passes away. They have an old gun that they did not register for whatever reasons years ago, and they had a chance. And after 68, they've never had that chance again. So the gun is literally a contraband gun. And I'll tell them, you know, you could destroy it. You know, there's specific regulations how to destroy the parts or the receiver, the actual machine gun itself, the serialized part. Then the parts itself have a value, or you can just dispose of the gun, surrender it to the ATF, whatever they see fit. But unfortunately, there is no way to get that gun registered. Now, under the 68 amnesty, if you can prove that you were deployed via military action, that the gun would have been stateside and that you were assigned overseas and can prove that during the amnesty in 68, you can still get that gun registered. But that's
slim.
I've never known or heard anybody in that situation. I know that is true, but I don't. All those pieces will fall together. But beyond that, you're pretty much up the creek.
Yeah, that'd be like hitting a bullet with a bullet.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, so, and I guess I would imagine then the notion that, you know, well, I don't want to sell it. If I can't get it registered, I don't know, maybe I'll just plug the barrel or weld it shut. That doesn't actually work either, does it? I mean, there's a way you mentioned destroying the weapon, it has to be disposed of in a specific way.
Sure. The demil procedures have changed over the years and become more aggressive. The ATF is sort of chasing the manufacturers that legally remanufacture to start out with a saw cut. People are welding those back up. Now we're at the process of a torch cut, lost metal in specific areas on the gun. So
they want metal removed.
Exactly. Right, if you go in and just plug the barrel, you know, back in the 1950s up until 68, yeah, that was a deactivated gun, no longer considered a machine gun. But now a welding in the barrel, anything, even though it won't shoot, it's still a machine gun.
Right.
It has to be destroyed per the regulations, which basically are all the same. You'd have to torch cut that receiver three times. And there are specific locations per gun, but basically big lost metal torch cuts.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I do know that people have found these, you know.
Sure,
and thought, hey,
happens
you
all the time.
It's you know, and
you'll even see them at gun shows laying on the table. You're like, wow, what do you got here? And oh, it's a World War II gun. Well, is it papered? No. I'm like, well, here's the deal.
Yeah,
yeah.
The ATF isn't going to like finding that.
No, no.
Or in fact, they might like finding it. But okay, well, just real quick, give us you buy guns.
Correct. I buy machine guns, regular guns, anything in between.
Okay. How do people get a hold of you?
I probably go on your website. Trigger Time with Joe Barrett.
Yeah.
I have a hyperlink up to Inverse Technologies on there. Just click on that. My email, our phone number's on there. You're welcome to contact me either way, anytime. Any questions? And I deal machine guns. I prefer machine guns, but when I got in the business years ago to make a living, I had to deal with all guns, and
sure.
I really got into the older guns, muskets. I buy muskets to black powder to machine guns. Anything in between.
Yeah, I can personally attest to that. I buy a lot of stuff from Trent, and it comes from all over. So he's always got a lot of neat stuff. We are going to take a short break. We'll get back to the machine gun topic here in just a moment. If you'd like to join the show, 749-5500. We just got a break here for the news. Back in a moment with more Trigger Time with Joe Barrett here on 55KRC, the talk station.
55KRC.
Most homes are under-insulated, and if you want to save some energy dollars, consider insulating your home. Ray Sinclair Roofing can help you lower energy costs by adding insulation, cellulose insulation. It contains fire retardants, has an R value of just under 4 per inch of thickness, an attic in this area around an R42, which means you probably need some additional insulation. Ray Sinclair Roofing can also help with roof ventilation to make your home more comfortable. Family-owned, three generations, top to bottom, wall-to-wall, neighbor to neighbor. Give them a call, 513-874-1234.
A child's laugh is a real miracle. And we all want healthy, happy kids. When a child is sick or needs help, there's a Children's Miracle Network hospital nearby. You can help by going to your local Walmart or Sam's Club to buy a virtual balloon and help kids at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. Visit ChildrensMiracleNetwork.org today to find out how you can help make miracles happen. Hospitals helping local kids.
Hi, Brian Thomas here with a solution for folks who don't like to paint. Use PPG Porter's Silk & Touch. It covers better. It touches up great. Once we use Silk & Touch in my home, we never use another paint again. And for outdoors, you can't beat PPG's Porter AcroShield. So do it right the first time with PPG Porter paints. Available at local dealers like McCabe Do It Centers, Beck Paint and Hardware Stores, and Marilee's Hardware Stores. To find the Porter paint dealer in your neighborhood, visit 55krc.com and click on Brian Thomas Recommends.
This is a 30:30 Fox News update on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler. Still waiting on the next step as containment cap testing continues in the Gulf.
Testing on the new cap was supposed to be completed at 4 p.m. Eastern. It's currently holding steady against the weight of all that oil.
Fox Radio's Jessica Stone, the AP reporting, scientists are concerned about possible seepage and methane leaks. Close call for the pilot of a light plane and the driver of the SUV. His plane clipped when it crash landed.
It's a lucky day for this Isuzu driver, and had there been a passenger, it could have been a whole different story, because the passenger compartment was the that took the brunt of the hit.
Phoenix Police Lieutenant Tina Gonzalez, a relative unknown, wins the British Open on ESPN.
At the home of golf, he's become a household name. Louis Oosthuizen, 2010 champion at St. Andrews.
The 27-year-old from South Africa. Fox News, we report, you decide.
55 KRC.
Thomas Jefferson once said, "No free man shall ever be precluded the use of arms." The decision to own a firearm isn't an easy one. What type should you buy? Where can you go for training? What are the laws governing carry and transport? And what role does the Second Amendment play in the lives of Americans? Listen in as we delve into this often controversial topic and separate fact from fallacy. Explore the right to bear arms and all that goes with it. Tune in Sunday nights at 7 for Trigger Time with Joe Barrett, right here on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Ryan Thomas, Monday on the Morning Show. Nathan Bacharach and Ed Fink for Money Monday, and a spleen vent from my dad. 55 KRC, the talk station.
Okay, you're back with Trigger Time on 55 KRC, the talk station. If you'd like to join the show with a question or a comment, give us a call now at 749-5500.
Thank you, Amy. That's right. This is Trigger Time with Joe Barrett. I'm your host. We're talking about machine guns and gun-related topics. 749-5500 if you have a question. We do have a couple callers on the line. Let's try to help a couple of them. Patrick? Hello,
yes,
Patrick.
Sir.
Yes,
yes,
thank
sir.
You for holding. For hopefully we can help you. What can we do for you?
Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I've got a felony conviction, a federal felony conviction back in 1983. I've been in no trouble since, and I was just curious, is it ever possible for me to possess or purchase a firearm in Ohio? Or?
Well, first of all, while you have a felony conviction, no. But you, what you need to do is contact an attorney. Depending on where you are, you can contact our office, Kirkendall Barrett, and either I can help you or I can put you in contact with someone who can. But there are procedures for regaining your gun rights. But it's pretty diverse depending on what the charges were and what the particulars are and what your situation is now. So it's probably not something I could help you with right here, but it's certainly worth calling an attorney.
Right, because I've been told by I've got friends who are attorneys. Just out of curiosity, I've asked them, and they've said actually one was a federal prosecutor at one time, and he said that there is no federal law that allows for any kind of expungement to get a firearm. He said it literally takes a signature from the President of the United States, as in a presidential pardon, to get a federal expungement.
And just,
I don't know if that's true or not, or if it still is, or
I wouldn't want to, you know.
Yeah,
I never I know what somebody really has until I sit down and look at it with them. And so pretty much my pat answer is I'd want to talk to you and look at what you have. Sometimes people have more than what they think. Sometimes they have less than what they would think. And so I would say it's always a good idea to just talk with somebody, okay?
But there are people that have regained their gun rights, Patrick. I will tell you that. So
with a federal conviction?
From what I've been told, that it has happened. Now, I've never – I don't know anyone that has – but in prepping for this show, we've included a lot of experts, and as you've indicated, if you talk to five or six different people, you'll hear. I mean, I had a judge tell me that it was possible, and I've had a lawyer tell me that it's not, and I've had, and vice versa. The best thing to do is to sit down with somebody and make a dedicated effort, because people do tend to just say whatever they think at the time. Make a dedicated effort to find out, and if you find out you were wrong, it was a worthwhile venture.
All right. Okay.
All right, Pat.
All right, maybe I'll contact you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
749-5500. Let's see if Andy's got a question about regulations of the FFL. Andy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I got a question about FFLs. Back in the early 90s, I was interested in getting one, and I didn't do it. The so-called assault weapons ban came out, and I was under the impression that after that, the ATF wanted to get rid of a lot of the kitchen table dealers, and if you wanted an FFL, you needed to have a storefront or a retail store. Is that the case?
Trent would have to answer that. I'm not sure.
yes and no. You're right. During the Clinton administration, they really clamped down on reducing the FFLs. They went from something like 400,000 to currently we're well under 200,000 now. What they've really done is enforced current law, and really when they give you an FFL, they look at zoning. That's the biggest thing. Whereas back to your point in the early 90s, you filed – I saw something on 60 Minutes years ago. So guys in jails are getting FFLs issued to them. There's no due diligence on the ATF side at all, and they really cut down on that. Probably hard to argue with, but they really – their way of doing it was looking at zoning. They said, okay, you're getting a license to sell guns to the public. Zoning out of a residence doesn't do that. So that's how they really curtailed and cut the FFLs back. To have a retail spot, no, I would disagree with that in zoning. And that's going to come down to local zoning and township and what they allow. But some sort of business zoning or higher, B1, B2, up through industrial – but house FFLs, unless you get – I've known some guys out of their house that do it. They'll get a variance for their zoning board on zoning. But it really all comes down to zoning. That's really the crux of it right now to getting an FFL.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what I thought. I remember that now.
Yeah. So, okay, Andy.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Thank you. No problem. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. All right. Good question. 749-5500. We got Jim online, Northern Kentucky. He's got a question about Class 3 firearms. Jim, welcome to the show.
For you.
Sure.
If you were going to consider buying a Class 3 firearm machine gun, is there a particular one that you like?
Oh, well, that's an individual thing. You know, here's the thing. I get more compliments on my Thompson submachine gun, you know, the old Tommy gun. I get more I get more compliments on that. But if I go to shoot one, I take my MAC-10 with a silencer. It's just unbelievable. There's nothing quite like it. Now, as far as class goes, yeah, the Tommy gun's got the mystique and the class and all this. You know, you stand there and it weighs 10 times what the MAC-10 does and it fires half as fast, but it all depends on what you're going for. The MAC-10 is the one that I have that I most enjoy shooting. Trent has probably shot a billion times more of those than me. Trent, do you have a favorite, or can you pick a favorite right now?
I mean, I have a favorite, but I think what's important is the finances. Machine guns, we talked about, as a finite supply, so prices on them can get steep really quick. Thompson's, you're $12,000 plus. The Macs are nice because for $3,000, you can get a fully automatic 45 machine gun. You put a suppressor or silencer on it. They've got the stigma on them, but they're a great gun. They're reliable. They use a good mag, the grease gun mags. And they run, and they're a lot of fun, and they're $3,000 compared to you can pay as much as you want for a machine gun. So,
is it a pretty accurate firearm?
Absolutely. It is. People, once again, you'll talk to people who don't know anything about the gun. Oh, it's a bullet hose. You can easily hit a man-sized target, you know, dump a 30-round mag at 25 yards with a silencer or suppressor on the gun after 100 rounds of training.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can – when I first got the gun, I was impressed at how little how inaccurate all the information I'd been told about it was. The gun is extremely accurate, even at distances, like you said, of 20 some yards. When you put the suppressor on it, it's even more controllable. But you run a couple of mags through it, and I'm telling you, you could write your name with it. It's really that controllable. And I will say this, in over 7,000 rounds now and counting, 7,000 rounds and counting, and when I shoot my machine gun, I make use of the fact it's a machine gun. Dump the mags. You ask the guys at Target World, I dump the whole 32-round mag or 30-round mag. Not a single misfire or hang-up in that MAC-10. Nothing. I have not had one single misfeed in over 7,000 rounds of ammunition in my MAC-10. So as far as reliability goes, I don't think there's anybody else that could say that about their machine gun, regardless of what it was.
And how many times have you cleaned
that?
Once.
I'm going to squeeze this in real quick. Was on an M16. I noticed that there seems to be a very large variation of M16s as far as who made it associated with value, like a Colt versus an Armor Light or whatever. You know, I'm not that up on it.
Yeah, yeah.
But is there that much difference? Difference when you get down to the function of the firearm as a full auto, and Is it a collector thing?
No, you're exactly right. All the registered M16 machine guns are either going to be conversion guns, which were guns up until 86, you know, that the Gun Owners Protection Act would cut off production. Guys could file a Form 1 and legally convert their semi-auto to full auto. Those guns are about 10,000 right now. Original Colt guns can be 15 to 20, depending on their exact vintage and this and that and condition. The only difference between them and the Colt gun, give or take, is collectability. That's it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.
Jim,
thank you.
Good questions.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, we've talked a lot about machine guns. We talked about our favorites. I've obviously got my favorite, but I don't have as many of them as Trent does. So what I wanted to ask is for those of you who are out, those out there who are listening, let's say, like this gentleman, let's say I've decided I'm going to buy a machine gun. I want to own it. How do I do it? I call you because I know you've always got them and you're know where to get them. So I call you. How does the process go from there?
Typically, the first step is find the gun, then purchase it. And let's assume it's out of state. You're going to buy the gun, negotiate with that person on a price. A lot of times, the terms in this industry are 100% funds up front. At that point, you have to find a Class 3 dealer in your state to have the gun transferred to. Anytime a machine gun goes over state lines, just remember you got to have a dealer involved. It's basically the easiest way to remember it. Let's say you buy a gun in Indiana. You've worked with the owner. You purchase it. Then contact a Class 3 dealer like myself or anybody else in the state. I then get with that person or that dealer, have the weapon transferred to me. Every time a machine gun changes hands, it has to have a pre-BATFE approval. And dealer to dealer can be a month or even longer now. Dealer to individual or individual to individual could be up to 4 to 6 months now. So it's getting longer. It used to be a year. Many years ago when I got into this, it was 9 months to a year. So now we're 4 to 6 months. But once you buy the gun, have it transferred to a dealer, then that dealer will transfer it to you via that Form 4 we talked about, and that's another 4 to 6 months. So the whole process can be 9 months, worst case, maybe right now a year to get the gun.
It's a grueling process, I can tell you myself.
But
it's worth it. It's worth the wait.
Definitely. Actually, once you do it, you get very used to it. Getting, you know, the only difference is you get the passport photos, you get fingerprint cards, right. And we talked to last show about the signature from the Clio on the back of the form, and you can set up an LLC or corp to legal ways to get around that.
Right.
But it's not that terrible. It's certainly a lot harder than walking in the target world and walking out with a rifle. No doubt.
Right.
But definitely a more involved process. But you have to involve a Class 3 dealer, unless it's if your person you're buying the gun for is in the same state as you. You do not have to have a dealer. You still have to file the Form 4. You still have to get ATF pre-approval, but a dealer does not have to be in the middle if you're both are residents in the same state.
I see.
But typically, it seems like when you buy a gun, it's typically out of state. The gun's coming in. It's got to go through a dealer at that point.
Probably going to go through a dealer.
Yeah, and you got to be 21 to at least own these guns, just like a pistol.
Yeah.
Another consideration. But
Right. Beyond
that, that's pretty much in a nutshell the process.
That's the process. And it's, just for those of you who are listening, it's, the process sounds a little grueling with the wait period and everything like that, waiting for the ATF to approve. But I'll tell you something, it's a lot of fun once you finally got it. We're going to talk a little bit more about the options of the signature options with the Clio signature. We'll touch on that in the last segment. We're going to take a short break. Back in a moment with more Trigger Time with Joe Barrett here on 55 KRC, the talk station.
55 KRC. If you're buried in credit card debt, the last thing the credit card companies want you to know is that they're affected by the same trouble you are. The only difference is that they can get the government to bail them out, and you can't. Do you want to hear the other secrets they don't want you to know? Information that you, too, can use to reduce your debt? We're Consumer Debt Advocate, and we'll give you the information the credit card companies don't want you to know. Information you can use to settle your debt faster than you ever imagined. And right now, we'll give you that information for free. Just call now. 1-800-655-3232. Your creditors know the secrets to keeping you in debt and making themselves profitable. Now, you can use their secrets against them towards settling your debt once and for all. See how easy it can be. Call us now for this must-have free confidential information. 1-800-655-3232. That's 1-800-655-3232. 1-800-655-3232.
Thomas Jefferson once said, "No free man shall ever be precluded the use of arms." The decision to own a firearm isn't an easy one. What type should you buy? Where can you go for training? What are the laws governing carry and transport? And what role does the Second Amendment play in the lives of Americans? Listen in as we delve into this often controversial topic and separate fact from fallacy. Explore the right to bear arms and all that goes with it. Tune in Sunday nights at 7 for Trigger Time with Joe Barrett, right here on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Sean Hannity, Hannitizing the Tri-State weekdays at 3 and at 55KRC.com.
Search Listen Live
from 55KRC, the talk station.
Okay, you're back with Trigger Time on 55KRC, the talk station.
Thank you, Amy. That's right. This is Trigger Time with Joe Barrett. I'm your host. For those of you who'd like to contact us, just to, because I forget to do this as often as I should, you can contact us through our website at www.triggertimewithjoe.com. You can email us at joe@triggertimewithjoe.com. Trent, president of Inverse Technologies, our guest expert tonight, you can find his website, a link to his website there as well.
On the resources page.
On the resources page. And so you certainly can find him and a lot of our past guests there as well. Please do email me. For some of you that, you know, you may have called in tonight, you may have had a question, we may not have got to you, about one thing or another, and it's not exactly what we're talking about tonight. We do want to get this information out to people because we did get a lot of questions and requests about more info on Class 3 weapons, so I want to make sure we cover that tonight. And if we didn't get to your concealed carry question or whatever tonight, then email it to me. Just give me an email, joe@triggertimewithjoe.com. I assure you you'll get a prompt reply. In fact, I usually try to respond to them the same night. I'm usually Sunday nights. I'm at home responding at 10:30, 11 o'clock. So Trent Warnicke again is with us. We're talking about machine guns. Now, the process for buying a machine gun, you find the machine gun, you pay for the machine gun, then you begin the paperwork process. It's got to, and basically what you're doing is you're transferring the ownership. You're paying the ATF. The ATF gets $200 every time this thing changes hands. That's what it is.
Well, dealer to dealer, there's no transfer. But anytime it goes to or leaves an individual,
right,
$200 is due to the ATF.
To the ATF. So if I own it and then Scott wants to own it, they get $200.
Correct.
But if it goes between dealers, it's not. And that's for obvious reasons, I think, because the dealers are not.
They're meant to be reselling
it. Yeah, they're reselling it. They don't intend to keep the thing. So then the ATF gets their $200. They put you got to get this paperwork filled out. There's a section on the Form 4, I think is what
Correct.
It's called, and it asks for a CLEO, Chief Law Enforcement Officer, signature. Now, what this is, and there are some chief law enforcement officers that will not sign it. Okay, I'll just tell you that right now. This is not asking them, do you authorize this person to have this weapon? It is not requesting that they say, yes, I think he should get this, or I think this is a good idea, or I authorize him. It is simply asking, if you read the form for it, simply it says, do you know of any reason that he should not own such an item? That's what they're asking. Okay, and there are chief law enforcement officers that believe, nope, if it requires my signature, then that means you're getting my permission, and I'm not going to give you permission. So, in order to ease the burden on some of our chief law enforcement officers, there is an option. You can simply contact Kirkendall Barrett Law Offices, and you form an LLC or a trust. And as a trust or an LLC, I don't need that signature, do I?
That's correct. It transfers to that entity.
Right.
It could be a corporation, too. S-Corp, C-Corp, LLC. LLCs are a little easier to set up than a corporation.
Right. Tina's Kirkendall Barrett, and they're on our website, too, by the way, on the resource page, aren't they, Tina? Aren't you? Or are you just on the – their ad shows up on our
right,
website, but
right.
It should be. You can contact us if you want to get to them until they are, but they will be under there. But Kirkendall Barrett did an LLC for me. I simply, it didn't take them long at all. Had it done. There we go. Now I don't need to include or bother the chief law enforcement officer. They don't have to feel like they're being asked for permission. They don't have to feel like they're giving, allowing or not allowing. And maybe it's better that way. That way, because obviously some of them feel like, no, I don't want the responsibility. They can't accept it. They're not asking you to assume responsibility. They're asking you if you know of a reason they shouldn't have it. This is a right you have. You can legally own these. There is, so you should, in my opinion, if you have a right and you don't exercise it, then what's the point of having it? You should do it. You know, I think the best reason in the world for owning a machine gun is because you can own one. So why not? A lot of people, you hear a lot of horror stories. Before I did this, Trent, I can't tell you, hanging around the gun shops, I can't tell how many guys, because I would talk about doing it, and I always heard this. Oh, man, if you do that, ATF will be coming to your house midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. They'll just knock on your door.
Yeah, they keep killing my dogs.
Yeah. you know, and the thing is, the ATF, and I'm not saying the ATF doesn't have its bad people. I'm sure it does, like every organization on the planet. But I've owned Class 3 weapons for quite a while now. They've never bothered me. I've talked to people who have owned them for many, many, many years who say, I've never had an interaction with them. They've never come to my house and asked to see the gun, check the gun. And if they do want to come and ask and look at something on the gun, it's usually because some serial number was transposed, mm-hmm. and they just need to look and see what the serial number actually is on the weapon. I've heard of that happening once. Mm-hmm. So it's not it's the ATF is, again, you've gone through the gauntlet.
Sure.
You know, they know that a person who's going to go through this to own this weapon is not going to go out and use it to rob a 7-Eleven. Right?
Sure. No, I agree with you. I've had the same experience as well, both as a private machine gun owner and as a dealer.
Right.
Had no problems.
The horror stories are the horror stories. And it's like anything else. When you hang around the gun shop, you hear all sorts of stories about if you do that paperwork, man, they'll be beating down your door, everything like that. That's all hogwash. None of that's true. The ATF does not care. If you want to basically bare your soul to them to own a machine gun, they don't care if you've got one or not. It's been my experience because I've dealt with them. I've had to deal with them a few times on a paperwork issue that I messed up. They were very pleasant. You know, they know that you are not, you know, the leader of some street gang who's arming your thugs. They know that. So by all means, if you're inclined at all, you should contact Inverse Technologies, get a hold of Trent. You can do that again through our website, triggertimewithjoe.com. Inverse Technologies. Trent has been dealing in these for quite a while. He knows so much about this. Amazing. I've learned a great deal and talked to him. He knows everything about machine guns. We talked about price of machine guns. It's all, again, because the registry is so small.
Yeah.
What are the other things a person might buy that is Class 3 weapon? I mean, it's not just machine guns.
Usually the starter gun would be a MAC-10. They come in 9, 45, mm-hmm. 380s, around $3,000. Get a silencer for another, you know, $800,000 with tax and everything.
And a silencer, you can buy a silencer just like you can a machine gun.
Correct. Same process.
Same process,
yep,
right?
Same exact process. They're not as expensive because they were not limited by these laws. You can still buy a newly made silencer suppressor today.
Right.
So the prices haven't escalated. You know, a MAC-10, you know, not that long ago were a few hundred dollars. Now they're $3,000.
Yeah.
The next gun up that's popular is probably the M16 variant. This is so modular, converted to so many different calipers. There you're starting around the $10,000 mark for a registered M16. Next gun after that, now you start getting into more really collector value. If $10,000 for an M16 is not enough of a collector value, which it is, then you start, the next echelon are going to be your belt feds, which typically your 1919s and whatnot are going to start, you know, 12, 13, 14 on up from there. And then your collectible guns. You're paying big money just because it's a nuance. And that's one thing unique about machine guns I like is they all have history to them. You go and buy a handgun at a gun store, you're getting a newly made gun. Unless you're buying a 1911 or something with some history to it, it's a new production gun. You're buying it for, you know, functional purposes to defend yourself, which is great. But all these machine guns, they all have a unique history, development. They all went through potential trials with the military for usage. Some didn't make it, some did. Just every single one has unique history that really makes them different. That's a lot what you're going to pay for. You start getting that $15,000 plus, you're going to buy Thompson's at $20,000, $30,000, just rarity, condition, just how many were made, prototype guns. It goes, the sky's the limit on values.
And honestly, it's not a bad investment. If you think about the growth, in our business,
sure.
We're in the gold business professionally. Sounds like it's not a bad investment.
It's traditionally been well, and they're holding machine guns now are pretty much holding their ground. They're not increasing like they were, but if you're not losing now in this economy, you're doing well. So yeah. I would agree with you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, I hear from people all the time in my professional life. Again, we deal in rare coins and bullion. People are always looking for a place to put their money where it'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, when they asked me that question, I've added something to that list of things that you can put your money into and your money be safe. And it now includes class three weapons, because especially machine guns, because the machine guns, as you've indicated, there's only so many of them. There's not going to be one more that's ownable tomorrow than is ownable today, because there's only so many. And anytime you've got a finite amount of something that can be owned, and you have an interest that is potentially going to grow.
Yeah, supply and demand.
It's supply and demand. And you know, when's the last time you heard anybody talking about it being legal to own machine guns on the radio? I heard it one other time, and that's when we did it.
Yeah,
when you were here before. So it is kind of a subculture in that it's not something a lot of people realize. I can't tell you how many times I've had people tell me, you know, and we probably got about a minute before we got to close, but I've had people tell me when they see me shooting my machine gun, they're like, "Hey, you can't. That's illegal. It's illegal." And, you know, you want to be nice and understanding, and so you kind of take them by the hand and explain the situation to them. But the bottom line is, not a lot of people know.
No.
I think if a lot of people knew, these things would be a lot more expensive.
Well, I see a lot of gun owners that are just anti-machine gun. You know, let's call a spade a spade. Our Second Amendment rights are not for just hunting and home defense.
No, they're not.
And owning machine guns is a military weapon with a viable use beyond recreational, to be quite frank with you.
Right. And you should be allowed to own those. You should be allowed to. And we are allowed to own them. I'm saying, contact us if you need some help. Inverse Technologies, contact them through our website. Trent Warnicke's with us. Trent, we want to thank you for being here. If you've got guns you want to sell, Inverse Technologies buys them. If you're looking for anything, they sell them. I mean, I'm here to tell you, because I do it all the time. Trent, I want to thank you again for
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Look forward to it again.
Amy?
Okay, that's it for another hour of Trigger Time with Joe Barrett. We'd like to encourage our listeners to responsibly exercise their Second Amendment rights by being armed whenever legal and joining the NRA. Please visit our website, www.triggertimewithjoe.com, and email questions and suggestions to info@triggertimewithjoe.com. Tune in next Sunday at 7 p.m. for another hour of Trigger Time here on 55KRC, The Talk Station.